did it take you to make the list?
Really?
Yeah, apart from the fact that it's taken us a year to get this together, how long did it take?
From when you first asked me, I was probably thinking about it nonstop for about 3 or 4 months.
Nonstop.
Well, okay, not nonstop, but like when we were doing the, you know, what are your favourite movies thing,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't commit to putting it on the page because...
You didn't want to insult the other movies?
Yes. What, because of that,
yeah.
So I knew this time around, right, Matt's asked me to do this thing, so those 10 songs don't necessarily represent the best songs ever, and I'm not allowed to change my mind or whatever.
Yeah.
But it did make me think about all the music that I listened to, and if I had to pick 10, what 10 I'd put on. So it was...
It's a pretty weird list.
Okay.
Like, it's not... You don't have any, like, classical... Oh, you know, like, when I grew up, my dad listened to Elton John a lot, so there's an Elton John song in there, or this song was always on the radio when I grew up and reminds me of... It's
true.
Very, very specific.
Yes.
But
popular.
There are a couple where I was like, why would you choose this one? But I guess that's the point, isn't it?
Yes. Well, look, I did consider putting stuff on that I'd heard when growing up that Dad had played, but then it didn't leave enough room for stuff about me.
All right, well, the first song you chose was The Streets.
Yes.
Turn the Page.
Yes.
Right?
And I think I original Pirate Material was the single.
Yeah.
And I pretty much loved it the first time I heard it on the radio. And I think that's all of the kind of garage, somewhat breakbeat,
yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff that was in the background, plus Mike Skinner's voice. Like, I don't know. I didn't really like... hip-hop rap stuff
yeah.
when I was younger, and I like it a lot now, a lot.
Yeah.
And I've come around to American stuff from liking British stuff first.
I think that came out in my memory, maybe because I lived in England around yeah. that time, but that's in the early 2000s.
Yes.
A lot more of that British accent,
yeah.
I think, came out, and I yeah. think helped. Like you said, like get into hip-hop this way, not this way.
Yes, yeah.
Because people get into hip-hop all different ways. I think I got into hip-hop through the Beastie Boys, so
mm-hmm.
it was all a bit different. You get people getting in all kinds of ways.
I remember hating the people that liked Beastie Boys when I was at high school.
Because of Fight for Your Right to Party, or
no, because
just in general?
Just
because
in general, the music. I
yeah.
didn't like it, whereas I love Beastie Boys now.
Yeah.
But I just didn't. I don't know, it's kind of that stereotypical, oh, hip-hop's crap, isn't
yeah.
that rapping, it's not music thing.
crazy. But I was a bit, I guess, musically retarded in the real sense of the word. Like, I didn't get into music at all with any kind of diversity until I was about 20. Well, until I moved out of home and then moved in
mm-hmm.
with people who, oh, these guys like Bob Dylan and this guy likes punk. But that's when you got into hip-hop? In 2002?
I don't know. Honestly,
like Eminem passed you by, like the early Eminem
yeah,
stuff?
Oh,
or?
That's that. Eminem's interesting because when I started teaching in 2000,
yeah.
One of the science classes I taught of year 9s or year 10s, they loved Eminem.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were like those kids, that kind of kids that worked really well when there was music playing. So they asked if they could put it on, and I listened to it and thought it sounded awesome.
Yeah.
But I had massive problems with the homophobia and the swearing and the misogyny, like really big problems.
Yeah.
But I also could not believe how awesome it was.
Yeah.
Can we put it on, sir? Turned into they had to convince me why it was okay to listen to in
yeah.
the face of everything that I guess I wasn't listening to close enough. I didn't know the history of his skits and that kind of stuff. I didn't know that there was parody and all that kind of stuff in what he was doing. But yeah, that was probably a starting point.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. How do you, I guess, reconcile that?
That's it. Turn the page on the day, walk away. Cause there's sense in what I say. I'm 45th generation Roman, but I don't know them or care when I'm spitting. So return to your sitting position and listen, it's fitting. And I'm miles ahead and they chase me. Show your face on TV, then we'll see. You can't do half, my crew laughs at your rhubarb and custard verses. You rain down curses, but I'm waving your hearses driving by. Streets riding high with the beats in the sky. all stare, eyes glazed. Garage burned down, the fire raged. For 40 days and in 40 ways. But through the blaze they see it fade. The sea of black, the beaming heat.
This is how an English teacher reacts to a hip-hop song.
Are you reading out my
notes?
I'm going to read
out your notes because I loved it. Chest-thumping, self-reverential, literary, rap, trash talk. What nerve, connecting himself to ancient Rome, then running with a metaphor and linking Roman battle to what a rave looks like, and then deconstructing his lyrics and method. Cheeky bastard. Now, I didn't get any... I got some of that, but I've listened to... That's the second time I've listened to it.
Yeah.
There's a lot. I'm like, really? Goes into that and goes into that? That's pretty cool.
Like, there's a line where he's talking about 45th generation Roman
yeah.
And he's like, I'm not good at remembering lyrics. Like, while I'm there, I'd need to have the lyrics in front of me, but I was not going to go to the depth of printing out all the lyrics because then we would never get this done.
No. Right?
But there's that bit about, it says, looks like Giza's raving, which is like, but there's a description of a battle beforehand as well. But it's that whole, like, to me, you know, rappers tease each other in their songs and, you know, do that I'm better than you thing.
Yeah.
And, like, he's going all out. It's, like, ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And then in the track, he says, you know, using the Roman stuff as my metaphor and simile. Like, so, okay, then he totally acknowledges that I'm just going all out and picking stuff that relates to being English, I guess, and that kind of stuff. And uses that in his, like, opening track of a hip-hop album, like,
yeah.
I'm so good. I'm like the Roman Empire. Like, yeah. Seriously. Like, and yet, it works.
Yeah.
And I love listening to that opening track. Like, it's really difficult for me to not want to, like, listen to the rest of the album right now. And there are some flippant tracks on it. There are some that have not held the test of time, whereas this second album has. But that opening track, to me, that defines Mike Skinner. It's amazing.
And it needs to be louder.
Oh, yeah. Totally, yeah.
That's a pretty good hook at the start.
Yes, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. All right, I want to get on to the second one because we'll be here all day otherwise,
yes.
Which was Biff Tech Bedrock. But I wanted to talk to you about, number one, the strange weirdness
yes. Okay.
Between our brains. Yeah. Every time we go, hey, back in 1994, I saw this movie, and you go, oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw it in 1994 too. That's cool. Today, I got you the list, and you said that it was on an old SBS show called Alchemy.
Yes, when I first heard this. Yep.
Yeah, and I went, oh, I used to watch Alchemy all the time. No one else did. Me, my mate, Wigo, and maybe his girlfriend at the time, because his cousin, Joe, had a band called Ubin. Because you linked that to when you met, was it when you met Janie or when you started hanging out?
What year was it? Yeah, we'd been going out for a couple of years by then, I think.
So how 90, old were you when 90? You started going out with Janie?
So... Is it 96 or 97 we started going out?
Oh.
So...
Like 20?
Yeah. Yeah, she was at my 21st birthday, but we weren't seeing each other. And I was at her 21st birthday in April the next year, and we're going out. So then it was the 13th of October the year before that we started going out. So...
Nice. You can't remember... You have to write down stuff so you remember all the stuff, but...
Yeah.
The day you started going out.
Yeah, well, I know it's the 13th of October, but I forget the year.
Uh-huh.
13th of October is like... That's the date I remember.
Nice.
Yeah.
What did you do on your first date, Nick?
We far out. We went to... Did we see a movie? I don't know. I think we saw a movie, but we ended up at the Pancake Parlor.
Nice.
And I don't know. We talked about... I remember, like, asking what her, like, university entrance score was. And it was higher than mine.
Yeah.
And that was awesome.
Wow. Okay, so you went to Pancake Parlor, and then you started going out and listening to this type of music, or...?
Well, no. No, I think at Janie's place, Janie played piano, and her sister played piano, and they listened to, like... They didn't listen to heaps of music at their place, compared to what we did at our place, it seemed. And I know they listened to lots of classical music and classical radio stations and that kind of stuff, so I felt totally out of my depth when we went to performances and things where... It was awesome, but I was learning how to listen to new music. But I never really clicked that me listening to electronic music and Radiohead and that kind of stuff would be new music for Janie.
Yeah.
So we were both
new
music crossover stuff.
That's what I like talking about. It's when people in relationships, when you do that crossover stuff and you all of a sudden your mood, not your mood, but your taste change to music, I found more than anything else. Movies, especially like with Justine, there's still resistance between us with movies. Like, I don't want to watch this, you know, Norwegian movie about child brides. But
something's eating at me. I just got this mental image of me wearing a terribly poor dress sense, meeting Janie in Manuka. Like,
Please explain further what poor dress sense means.
A vest thing over a white shirt. It was red.
Entertaining.
Anyway. But
it was red. A car dealer or something?
I'm not going there. It's a hard memory. I'm just wondering, I know we saw a film together. I'm wondering if we saw a film and then went to Civic, or this conversation that I think happened in the pancake parlor. This is what I'm telling. What I'm talking about.
Okay.
Now I recall the conversation. I'm not convinced it was in the pancake parlor. Okay. Nobody cares.
Except
for me. Right. Go ahead.
Because you'll be re-listening to this, going, liar.
You're lying.
That's not how it happened.
That's right. Or somebody will go, you told me something different. So I'm just covering myself just in case I told someone something different, which I probably didn't. Go on.
Good distraction technique. Look at the bell over here. Oh, okay. Where were we talking about? Bad fashion sense and...
Yes.
Oh, the change of music. That's what we're talking about.
We did a lot of watching Alchemy. When Janie visited my place, I had this crummy little computer monitor, Amiga monitor, connected to a VCR, so I could watch telly in my room. And we used to watch Alchemy. I think it was on Friday nights or Saturday nights or something. But we're watching Alchemy because I liked watching Alchemy because of the music and stuff on it. Yeah. And then the Biff Tech track came on, and I just remember after the track, both of us looking at each other like, oh my God, what was that? That was amazing.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Is that rare for you? Because it's, you know, like to have like a moment where you hear a song for the first time and you go, what the hell?
A couple of the songs on this list are like that. Yeah.
Yeah. That you like instantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Like Kid A, Radiohead.
Really?
Yeah.
That's the one on the list where I was like, of all the songs on the album, that and like Tree Fingers are like I said, the obscure ones.
Yeah.
Where you listen to it. The first time you listen to Kid A, you were like, this song's amazing.
There's a bit I didn't write. Oh, maybe I did write it in here. But anyway, yes.
Okay.
Because it was with other people.
Oh, right. Okay, so shared.
Yeah, so ask me about the listening party.
Okay.
When we get there.
The listening party, that's awesome.
If we ever
like
get to the...
from the 60s.
What time is it? Right. If we ever get there, ask me about the listening party.
Like the 60s. We're having a listening party.
Yeah. It's pretty much the last time that... I'm sure it's clearly... Because didn't bits of Kid A leak early? Like, incomplete online? But I haven't heard
my mate bought it home and said, let's put this on. Right. The first time I was like, what the hell is this? But you were the opposite.
Yes, completely the opposite.
Cool. But I always liked that. When you wrote about how like it was the first time you'd heard it, and I guess opened electronic music up to you, I was the same.
I listened to lots of electronic music before. I was really quiet. I mean, not commercial electronic music, because I had the Itchy and Scratchy's album, the one with Sweetness and Light, before that. So there's like really, like there's even kind of techno root stuff on there, which I don't really like techno that much, but some of that I really do.
Yeah.
And more Australian electronic stuff. And I mean, Biff Tech's the same, but Biff Tech opened up to me a much greater breadth of electronic music. I loved stuff already, but.
There's only a few times, I think,
where
that happens, where you're like, oh, what the hell is this? And more. Please, and more and more and more. But is that weird? Was that when you started going out with Janie?
It must have been. I mean, 97, 98. I mean, it was in that first year or so where we were sharing music and stuff. But it really did feel like Janie was listening to OK Computer. She'd heard it at my place and really liked it.
Yeah.
Whereas I was heavily obsessed with Tori Amos at that point in time, and Janie really didn't like Tori Amos that much. Like, I know she listened to Tori Amos because I did.
Yeah.
But I know she doesn't like Tori Amos that much, and I don't listen to Tori Amos that much anymore because I know...
When
you've got a shared music space, if somebody doesn't like what they listen to, it's not... Like, I can put headphones on and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Tori Amos was on speakers all the time. all the time.
She was just polite, started the relationship.
I don't know. Probably.
Maybe I'll learn to like this music.
I really liked it when she told me she didn't really like Tori Amos.
That was good. Yeah,
that was good. And because it made me, you know, when she liked OK Computer, well, that meant she liked OK Computer.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I mean that. Well, that's the next song, isn't it, Tori Amos? Nice segue, Nick. That was so smooth.
Did we even talk about Bedrock? Are we going into Bedrock? Just listen to Bedrock.
No, that's fine. You want to listen?
I want to listen to Bedrock.
Oh, let's listen to it.
Okay, we have to listen to it. That's good.
Song, you said was Tori Amos.
Yes.
Now, this was a big surprise when I got this.
Yes.
Nick likes Tori Amos and obviously really likes Tori Amos because you've mentioned that.
Yeah.
Is it previous album and the album after this?
So she had an album before this which I have never listened to because it's supposed to be terrible called Why Can't Tori Read? And the Y is the letter Y. Oh. So I've never even bothered and I just haven't bothered. I've just like not gone there. But this was her big breakout album. And then after this was Little Earthquakes and then Boys for Pele. And those three were like the peak of my loving of her stuff.
So I only know her through Cornflake Girl.
Well, yes.
I know of her a lot more, but when Cornflake Girl came out, it's so different to everything else. And it's just her. Like that's the good thing about Tori Amos is that she does whatever the hell she wants.
Often it feels really weird liking Tori Amos and being male.
Yeah.
There's a strong male following that are just kind of physically attracted to her.
Yeah.
Whereas, I'm not going to say I didn't find it attractive at all.
Yeah.
But the intensity of her lyrics and, like, what the hell are some of these songs about?
Well, this song, what the hell is it about? The line that she says, like, you're an ugly girl.
Yeah.
But I like the way you play.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Somebody
said that to her, either a producer or a boyfriend or an ex or something, but holy crap.
A lot of, like, it would appear, and from having read up stuff about her in the last little while picking, choosing which song, I knew there's lots of autobiographical stuff. Like, there's a song on this album called Me and a Gun, and that's, I believe, her retelling a rape experience.
Yeah.
Is that Me and a Gun?
This song's about bleeding and princesses bleeding.
Yeah. That's like there's a lot like in the okay. I'm stuttering. Slow down. Lots of her stuff. There's kind of religious stuff that I'd never understood.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, her father was a pastor or something as well. So she grew up in a really religious family.
Okay.
But then there's kind of heaps of stuff about independence and making herself and being the person that she wants to be. And I think a lot of that resonated with me as well. And I'm a sucker for piano.
Yeah.
And I know that this is kind of the popular use of piano in music type thing, right? But she's highly skilled. And people like people who I also
knew
who liked her.
So genuinely, that was awesome.
It's just scary. Like, her talents are scary, and her songwriting is just amazing. And I, like,
but this song scared me. Like, when I listened to it, if I had listened to that when it came out, 93, around that time.
Yep.
93. So when I was 15, that would have just made me go, whoa, this is too crazy.
Yes.
Let me put on the Bon Jovi I'm listening to.
Yeah.
But just in general, even now, I was like, this is super intense.
And it's not even the most intense one on the album.
I'm sure it isn't. but to think that this is what you were listening to.
Yes.
But then, like, your other songs in the next few, like Nirvana's Heart-Shaped Box and The Cure, what's it called?
Sinking.
Like, man, what did you do as a teenager? Did you sit in your room and
I did a lot.
Hide from the world?
Yeah, I did. And I walked a lot. I walked with my Discman.
Yeah.
And Discman.
I had a Discman for a long time.
That was awesome when I actually finally got one. That was the best present.
I think I bought one when I started teaching. That's how...
Wow.
How sad my childhood was.
Wow. I did a lot of sitting in my room listening to music. I did a lot of sitting in friends' rooms listening to music, like shared listen to music. But I used to walk to school every day or ride. But I think in high school I did a lot of walking to school because there was a group of us and we would all walk home together and like drop off at each other's houses and stay at someone's house one afternoon or just, you know, whatever. And so the morning walk to school was a good time to listen to music. And college as well. This would have been college time for me, so... But he caught me here. Yes, my loyalty's done. Like my anchor in the seventh grade. Running after Billy. Running after the rain.
Get back to Heart-Shaped Box.
Yes. Okay. So wow.
Read the review you wrote for Heart-Shaped Box. It's very nicely put.
Okay. So I jumped to this song after Tori Amos, and I'm reminded of my eclectic taste at this time. Yeah. And what it was like to be inside my head at the age of 17, 18. Like I was listening to PM Dawn as well.
Nice.
Like I was just thinking other tracks that I'll get to them at Frente. Right? Like, this is the eclectic range. It was, like, crazy. George Michael.
Yeah.
Everything. Anyway, but, yeah. I loved Nevermind. I got into Nevermind after other people.
Yeah.
I had a friend in college, and she was listening to it a lot, and I borrowed the album off her, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I didn't like it as much as other people. I mean, it just sounds like it was so crazy popular.
Yeah.
And now, listening to it, it's like, oh, that was... groundbreaking. I don't know.
Seriously, I still think it's crazy exciting just to listen to it.
But
see,
that
first drum, the drum when that drum kicks in and smells like Teen Spirit.
Not that it's not groundbreaking, but I just think In Utero is like,
yeah.
I'm doing things with my hands rather than speaking.
Stand up higher.
So I was really excited for In Utero, its release.
Yeah,
And I remember when I saw it in Impact Records in the city downstairs, and I remember having the CD in my hand and buying it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure on the radio before that I'd heard Heart-Shaped Box or something. I can't remember the order. But when it hit the chorus, and what have I written here? Jarringly discordant. I guess it's not really discordant in the technical sense of the word.
Yeah.
But certainly key change, unexpected key change in the chorus, and not being able to get into it instantly and thinking, maybe I don't like this. And then by what part, what did I say? I've written here, part way through, something clicked.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Nevermind seemed like old hat, which it did. I just like this guy that I was friends with in college.
Yeah.
We both love this album and we would walk past each other and like quote, lyrics. No.
That's what you would say?
No, weirder stuff. Yeah. Like, as you know, I've got no memory for it now, but I knew it well enough to be able to say some of the crazy, random lyrical strings on this album.
Yeah.
And I knew that, like, I knew my dad didn't like this album, and it didn't make me joyous. I was like, my dad likes lots of my music. I wish he could see what I liked in this, but maybe he had to be kind of an angry young teenager as well. I don't know.
I don't know. It's great. I love it. I love In Utero too, but Nevermind, I think, just kicks it.
Right, okay.
I didn't get in, I mean, I even later than you.
Yes,
I didn't get into Nevermind. I knew Nirvana because they were massive, and then Kurt Cobain died. But I didn't know or listen to it that much until, I don't know, maybe 97 or something like that.
Yeah.
I listened to the Unplugged album
that everyone
bought when that came out, and that was good. But it wasn't until I listened to I don't think it's even more obscure. I think my brother bought a tape back from Hong Kong or something, and it just had some live songs and some other songs where I was like, holy crap, there's a reason why they were so popular.
Yes, yeah.
And that had just obscure live songs and cover songs, and it was just incredible. And so then I went back and got Nevermind and In Utero.
Yeah.
At the same time, I listened to both together, I guess.
Oh, wow. That would be weird. I can't.
I still love In Utero, but Nevermind. I like the punk element of Nevermind. Like, I don't think it's grunge. Now, like you said, it's not groundbreaking listening to it.
Yes, yes.
Because I don't think it's grunge. It's just punk.
Yeah, you're right.
With a bit more melody, maybe.
My Nirvana story, which we'll tell for this, which I'm sure I've told you before, I wasn't into Nirvana enough.
Yeah.
Like, Smells Like Teen Spirit was a cool song. I liked it, but I didn't have the album. A school social at at Copen College was held at the Labour Club. And some of my friends, instead of going to the school social, jumped on the bus and to see Nirvana at ANU.
The famous
doors break down, everybody got in concert.
Where everyone, if you speak to anyone in Canberra, they went to it.
I know. See, my story is, can I just make it clear? I wanted to go and had the opportunity to, but I was too scared because I didn't, like, I would be doing something, like, I told my parents I was going to social.
Yeah.
And I would be breaking what I...
Yeah. I mean,
I always say I don't have regrets. That's a regret.
That's a regret.
That's a regret.
That sounds pretty amazing to... I mean, Nirvana, I always remember, like, the girls at school who were sort of alternative, you know, dreadlocks and smoked weed. That was as alternative as they got. When... At the social, like you said, Smells Like Teen Spirit would come on. They would go nuts. And every time, it wouldn't be Smells Like Teen Spirit. It would be Weird Al's parody every time. Every time. Like, what kind of DJ would go, hey, all right, I'll get them started. I'll put on Weird Al's parody of Smells Like Teen Spirit, but not the actual song.
Wow.
Cure, which is pretty sad, this song.
Sinking. From Head on the Door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a pretty sad song.
That's the last song on the album as well. And you kind of left with that. You listen to the album, you left with that.
But it's uplifting.
Yes.
It's hot.
It is.
Robert Smith makes depression uplifting.
Yeah, yeah. I know I say this to Janie sometimes. I know I say it to some of my friends sometimes. But, like, I'm actually... in general, pretty much really so happy with my life that I don't get the enjoyment out of listening to The Cure that I did when I was younger, when I was actually not happy. Because there's something about listening to this stuff when you're sad.
Yeah.
And, teen angsty, sadness, gothy stuff.
Everyone has teen angsty.
But you listen to it and you felt better. Like, you know, people were worried that you listened to The Cure and it made you sadder.
I wrote, if I heard my child listening to this, to The Cure... Nirvana and this Tori Amos, at least I would have been like, like that stereotypical response to, why are they listening to sad music?
Yeah. But then I listened to some of this stuff with my dad as well. Dad ended up like, Dad listened to the music that we would listen to as kids and it would be awesome when he would play it in the car and stuff. Like he would listen to it for his own enjoyment. So I know he liked The Cure. I know he liked a bit of Tori Amos. He didn't like any Nirvana.
Yeah.
But so there was sometimes kind of a shared experience there as well. Like he was listening to it.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of, even though maybe Dad and I didn't talk that much, he did actually listen to some of the stuff I was listening to. I've only just thought of that now.
That maybe he was listening and that was his way of, like, just checking up on you or...
I don't know. We'll have to talk about that, Dad. That's...
call Nick.
Yeah, call me.
When you hear
call
this.
Me. Well, yeah.
And explain that further. Wow.
And if... Yeah, no. Nah,
stop. Yeah, stop yeah, talking. Stop talking your
go
dad.
Go on, Matt, go. Yeah.
Stop talking to your dad. But so that is how you felt? What the lyrics are?
Oh, this bit that I copied and pasted.
The secrets I hide twist me inside, they make me weaker, so I trick myself like everybody else.
Yeah.
It's good teenage.
Yeah, yeah, oh, absolutely.
There's a lot of stuff here, but...
But then I think when this most meant something to me, I was like 19 or 20. I was certainly at uni.
Yeah.
Maybe first year uni or something.
But that's a pretty standard, or maybe it isn't a standard, teenage emotion, but that resonated with me when I read that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something to be said for teen angst because it's pretty popular.
Yes, it makes musicians a lot of money.
It does make musicians, but when I read the lyrics to Heart-Shaped Box, which I hadn't for a while,
yeah,
oh my God, bad teen poetry in some of that.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
But when you put it in with the music like that. I guess that's what music does.
Well, I guess that's why I haven't put a little quote from Heartshaped Box.
Yeah, because you can't read it in isolation.
No, you can't. But a lot of the Cure stuff you can read in isolation, I reckon.
Yeah.
I done poetry analysis stuff in class. You know, let's, you know, the OK Kids, some poetry's like music. Yeah. Let's look at some song lyrics thing.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. I just go, we're just doing music as poetry.
Right.
The end.
The end.
Because right. I don't like teaching poetry.
Oh, you don't like teaching? See, I love teaching poetry, but I've got to get it to the point where I can teach it.
That's how I just do it with music. I hook them in, like exactly yes, how you said, same, you know, yeah. This is a poem. Oh, wait, but there's a song version of it. Oh, that's cool. And it works. I mean, I play them Paul Simon's A Most Peculiar Man, and we read that, and then we listen to it. And they don't just go, oh, this song sucks. If you play them, if you played the song, if you go, oh, we're going to listen yes, to this song, yeah, they'll yeah. go, oh, lame.
Yes.
But you go yeah. through the lyrics, and then they talk about it, and then they listen to it, and they go, oh, this is a really good song. tricked into liking a Paul Simon song from
the
70s.
Did you do that point that you just did then?
I do. Yeah. I do yeah. point quite a lot at them and go, showed you. That's my job. As the years go by, I am simply I trick myself like everybody else. So the next songs we might discuss in pair two, which is Kid A from Kid A.
Yeah.
And Ghosts. From the Presets, what's their new album called?
Pacifica.
Pacifica, which I only got into last Saturday night, really, thanks to you. So Kid A, when it came out, was that, you weren't into, you were into
yes.
Radiohead?
Yeah, yeah. I pretty much got into Radiohead through my flatmate who I was living with. He liked Radiohead, and yeah. another friend of mine who's really close friends with me and has just moved back to Canberra. Hello, Chris. And both Chris and Simon liked Radiohead a lot, and before me.
Yeah.
And so I liked Radiohead a lot because they played me lots of Radiohead. I preferred OK Computer to yeah. the Bends.
Yes.
And what's their first album?
Pablo Honey, that no one ever listens
yeah,
to.
Yeah, whatever. But I preferred OK Computer very, very, very much. So did the Bends. I've only liked the Bends subsequently to liking lots of their other stuff.
Yeah.
I've gone back and listened to it and realised how good it is.
Yeah.
But to me, OK Computer was like, it's at the heart of what happened after all those other three songs. Like yeah. that was, the world might not be at a very nice place.
That's
and
a hell of nice to listen to.
Yeah. 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 But yeah. So my anticipation for the new album by Radiohead yeah. for this band that I liked, and I was able to, I was going to hear the album at the same time as all the other fans rather than I got into it after it came yeah. out type of thing. So there was a listening party at Impact Records.
Oh, that's cool.
And Chris and I.
Wow, that must have been weird.
Yeah, we got there on time. I don't know if there were tickets. I can't remember if you just rocked up. I don't know if it was just like rock up. And pretty much everybody just stood in the record store and they played it over the speakers.
So what was everyone's reaction when?
I'd read about leaks. But I hadn't listened to anything,
yeah.
so I knew it was going to be different. I also knew that Tom York was listening to lots of electronic music, and that there was kind of the songs that had those undertones and the glitchiness and the sampling in OK Computer, I loved.
Yeah.
I loved that aspect to it. So, opening track, man, and then...
Yeah, and everything
then,
in its right place.
Just, what?
My girlfriend at the time cracked it.
Really, like, hated it.
Played that. Every day.
Oh, right.
Every
wow.
day. You've got to listen to Everything in Its Right wow. Place again.
But then Kid A is like, Kid A links to the next, or the links to Boards of Canada.
Yeah.
Where I got into Boards of Canada. I can't remember if I got into Boards of Canada before or after this. Probably after.
Yeah.
Probably after. But then Boards of Canada and stuff has links to BiffTech as well. It's all this nexus of stuff.
But again, but, yeah, when I first said, oh, you got to choose songs.
Yeah.
One of the first things you said was like Tree Fingers. And I was like, Tree Fingers? What? And I listened to it and I was like, and? But remember I told you my daughter, she must have been about 6 months old, when I played it one day and Three Fingers came on, she just stopped.
Yeah.
And listened with a smile on her face and again and again and again. So, but still, I don't know how in an album like that. I mean, it's personal taste. That's why we're here. But
I don't know. Just like with Kid A, it's just this total dystopian music.
Yeah.
And it's so like, just imagine the studio. I mean, okay, reading stories about it now, it was much more collaborative than maybe the Thom Yorke control of OK Computer and stuff. And I know fans that wanted The Rock were like, "Where's The Rock?
Yeah,
where's The
Rock?" Well, that night, you know, listen to it in the in the Impact.
Yes, yeah.
What is that? Where people are like going, "What the hell is this?"
It was really quiet. People were standing around. I ended up sitting on the floor. It was so introspective. It was really like quiet. I remember looking at the floor a lot, like listening, looking at my friend Chris. I can't really remember what kind of glances we exchanged. I know he enjoyed it, but see, we have similar musical tastes in that sense as well. So it kind of, for both of us, it scratched that electronic itch and that Radiohead itch and did something new. Like, talk about moving new direction.
Talk about new,
yeah.
This is all weird blips and...
Yeah. And Kid A, like what Thom Yorke does to his voice. It's like totally computer tuned out. It's not Thom Yorke. I mean, okay. You know, what's the thing that they drew lyrics out of a hat and stuff and did da-da and stuff. Whatever. But I... like, how... try and not be Radiohead and they're still Radiohead.
Yeah.
I just love it. I just love it. I love the feeling that is invoked in me by Kid A.
Yeah.
I feel alone and I feel scared.
Yeah.
And it feels like music doesn't even make sense anymore. Like, I like the song, but it's like, this is... we have ended up here. How do we end up here? Type of thing. Thinking, how would they do this live? Are they going to tour this live? I've got to see them live. Like that kind of thought. Like, can they really go up on stage and play guitars and stuff and have samplers and do that?
Well, they
and
have...
do OK Computer stuff. And then will they actually tour an electronic thing?
Well, they had it, like the album, didn't they? A live album.
Yes.
Just after Kid A and Amnesiac.
Yeah.
Where it was like, this is how we do it. Not Montel Jordan.
Yeah.
This is how we do it. But... then my brain went quicker than I did then. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, that's right. There's people listening.
Not anymore. So I remember just going, like live, it just sounded even weirder. Like they went even further because it was even more electronica and minimalist. That was the difference. Like these huge soundscapes of OK Computer. And,
yes. Yeah.
And not that. And then, yeah.
They toured in a tent after Kid A, didn't they?
In a tent, yeah.
I remember all the online stuff and following online. And, oh, my God. They're making their own touring space.
Yeah.
They totally want to stick it to album companies, record companies.
Well, now they just do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I guess you can.
Yeah.
When you get to that. But then the next song you put was Ghosts.
Yes. Ghosts.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's tell the story. I've told you. I don't know if other people know. So that... like when I was commuting to and from the hospital, I think in hindsight maybe I should have done it more, but still, it felt like heaps for me. It was the most I saw my mum ever when she was sick and in hospital. And so then we'd been told either the day before or 2 days before or that day, I don't know, that it was terminal, that was likely cancer and mum was going to die. And so then I'm listening to stuff because it was at Woden Hospital.
So straight, Woden. Straight away, like after you come out of that, you go... Were you there with Janie?
Well, no, because I don't even... like, it was Dad telling... I can't remember if I was told by Dad
or
on the phone. A lot of it's a blur.
Yeah.
A lot of it's a blur, but...
The question I wanted to ask was, did you go straight to listening to music?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I...
Pretty much.
Thought, as soon as you came out, did you just go, I need to listen to something?
Mostly what it was is like I was working lots, and then I was driving, visiting mum at night a couple of times a week and on weekends. And so that drive from here to Woden's like 25, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's almost, you can almost fit an album in there. You can certainly fit an album in on the way there and on the way back.
Yeah.
And I needed stuff to listen to because seriously, the inside of my head was not good.
No. Why would it be?
It was not good. But yeah, then it was like, and then it was suddenly I had that crazy thought, like, I've got to ask Matt this question thought. And
all right, I'll tell my story.
Yeah, you tell your story. This is good. I'm rambling. Go.
I got a text from Nick at, I don't know, late, fairly late.
Yeah.
The whole point was, yeah, that's, if you, because I know you, and usually you email me at 3 a.m. and I check it in the morning, but I thought maybe you would need to get instant. Anyway, but it wasn't that late, maybe 10 or 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that sounds about right, yeah.
And the text read, I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah. I trust you more than me on this.
Yeah, mum's got his terminal. She's going to die.
Yeah.
I need something to listen to that will get me through this, but then won't affect me listening to the music in future.
Yeah.
And can you remember what I said?
You said Amnesiac.
Yeah, I said Amnesiac, and you listened to Kid A.
Yeah.
Weird. Another example of two people sharing one brain.
Yeah.
I was one album off. One of those. I was so annoyed. I didn't get that right.
Really?
No. Far out. Of course not. It freaked me out that you were like, I'm listening to Kid A.
Kid A, yeah.
So that...
And it held out. I still listen to Kid A and still love it. And it reminds me of Mum and that time, but feelings don't cloud the album.
So I can see that. I can see how you could listen to something like that that's very minimalist and like introspective and quite dark.
Yeah.
But like Presets album, just was that more on the way to work?
No.
Like riding to work?
It was on rotation. So it came out. Like the live streams of it online while Mum was in hospital.
Yeah, August, I think I looked that up, yeah.
And I remember listening to one of the singles and listening to Ghosts.
Yeah.
And then listening to it again. I posted on Facebook. You could find out the day because I posted on Facebook how beautiful and emotional I thought the song was. And I was just crying in the lounge. It was weird. Thomas, Eleni, and Janie like mucking around in here, and then me have with tears rolling in my face, and I couldn't even explain where the tears come from. It was such that it touched some emotional nerve in me that was kind of a bit more open than usual, I reckon.
And you just said it was emotional and beautiful, and they're not two words that you would normally use.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. That's very true.
I was going to say that describe you, but that's not very nice to say that. That's not what I meant.
But then, like, in listening to the whole album, like, I like the Presets. Presets are cool. They're cool, dance act, and they're really popular, and they're amazing. I've never seen them live, but my brother has, damn you, Adrian, and he said they were awesome.
Yeah.
And everybody I know that's seen them live said they're awesome, and you watch live stuff, they seem to do variations that make stuff cool.
Yeah.
But then Pacifica's so different. Like, the first track I heard from it was when there was that, this is coming from the new album, Youth in Trouble. Which builds up for 6 minutes and doesn't really have a payoff. Like, it's a little bit, but it's more anticipation for that. You've got to enjoy the journey to the payoff. And then Ghost is just like, as they describe it, and I would agree, it's a sea shanty. It's modern lyrics on a sea shanty type thing.
I was a very young man.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it starts.
But there's an age and a growth and a youthful mistakes and where you're heading to.
Yeah.
And Youth in Trouble, like, there's this theme of, you know, what's happening to, I don't know, what's happening to young people these days or what happened to us? What did we do when we were younger? And then Adults Only, you know, TV programs used to be rated Adults Only. Right? That's disappeared now.
Yeah.
But that's kind of from my youth. Like, the adults-only shows were for adults-only. So what time in their life are they thinking about when they call a song adults-only and refer to that kind of thing? And a lot of the tracks are long, slow, build-up, minimalist or kind of intense lyrics.
Yeah.
But nothing like their previous album.
But I guess, too, and I could be wrong, it's pop psychology bullshit probably, but, you know, like you... You, in this confrontation, I don't know a better word for it, with someone that dying than is going to die.
Yes, yeah.
And that always brings introspection and reflection for everyone around that. Like, oh, what have I done? You know, what would happen? It's that classic question of what would happen if, and looking back on your life. And I guess that's what is with your mum. You're looking back. So I guess that fits. I never piece that together. And maybe that's not even true.
No, but that sounds like, if anything, of making up a reason for it on the spot. But that fits.
Yeah.
That fits for me. I also have a soft spot for kind of like European dance music, kind of longer, less payoff, less radio-friendly type of stuff. And it's almost like that.
The lyrics are really brought to the front.
Yes.
In this album.
Yeah, they are.
Just the dance. That's what I noticed. So, like, whoa, okay. Yeah. Very clear what this song's about.
Yes, yeah. I mean, in some ways, there are a couple of songs on there that are throwaway. And there's one that's, I can't remember the name, that's one of the big radio singles, and I almost skip it. And then I get to halfway through, and I'm like, I'm glad I didn't skip that. But that's kind of like that delayed gratification thing.
Yeah.
It's like some of the songs, you got to wait. So I would love to see them play this album live. Like, seriously. And I'd be watching the crowd.
Yeah,
I'll be watching the people who like, oh yeah, I bought the album. I don't like Pacifica that much. I like the old stuff. And standing there through some of these songs,
just waiting for it to drop so I could dance.
Yeah, and then hang on, we only got to dance for 14 seconds. What? What do they do? Yeah, that I don't know.
Mate, you don't think like just listening to it at that time hasn't clouded your enjoyment of it?
No, not at all. No, I remember that time. I remember that it got me through that time as well. This is like a going out album for me. Like if I'm riding into the city to meet up with mates, often this is the album I put on my phone and listen to on the way in.
A going out album.
Yeah, a going out album.
Cool.
That I discovered while my mum was dying.
Count for nothing. Cocaine song and women and wine. Memories blurred and I make me shudder. Bed in the morning. 4-5, couple of days to get my head off. Now coming on back. Help me up, move right, left foot forward to go.
The next two songs, which again lead to the obscure,
well,
maybe not so much for now, but the Boards of Canada, 1969, which you introduced me to maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
3 years ago, because you said, listen to this stuff, and then I went, wait a minute, that's the stuff Tom York was listening to when I heard him on Triple J 10 years ago talking about when he made Kid A. So that was really cool. And I'm sure that made you feel really cool.
I'm sure I listened to Boards of Canada because of cool electronic stuff and I heard about them and because I heard Tom York had listened to them. I'm sure it was kind of, that was a nexus pushing point thing.
But you've got Kid A, which is somehow accessible, maybe because it's Radiohead doing it.
Yes.
And you can listen to it.
Yeah.
But Boards of Canada is, like if you put it on and go to someone, hey, listen to this, with no pre-awareness, they'd go, what is just
like? How do I listen to this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what I'm. We couldn't find the right word. Was that a lot of these songs are training your brain almost to how to listen to this? Like I think The Cure are like that. I think The Cure were like a lot of people maybe got into them with their more poppy songs and then worked backwards from there. That's what I did, a lot of people seem to have done that. But a lot of it, like Tori Amos, even and like Kid A itself and Biff Tech and Electronica and even The Streets.
Yes.
It's sort of, if someone just puts it on, you're like, this is very different and a very different sound. So you have to listen to it a couple of times.
I completely agree with you. And also, I've selected 1969 because I wanted Boards of Canada on this list. I selected it because there are a couple of little things that I like in it that I think are indicative of what Boards of Canada do.
Yeah.
But there are tracks that if it had been my put your favourite Boards of Canada track on here, it would be totally mind-blowing. And I couldn't even name one now. Like, I'm thinking there are two off their first album, maybe four off this album, where if you don't know who Boards of Canada are, you wouldn't know where to start to try and listen to it. I completely agree. So this one is, I think this is an accessible Boards of Canada.
Yeah.
But it also has that beat that sounds like a CD skipping,
yeah,
which is You know, they like get instruments and samplers and open them up and like mess with the circuit board so that the sounds don't sound right. And then they record that stuff and then they loop that stuff. And they, like Gia Gatti's got like like songs that are based on mathematical equations and stuff. And yeah. I think there's a Fibonacci sequence in one song. And there's one song that has a sample that's the same forward as it's reversed.
Yeah.
Like it's a palindromic sound effect. So, and so it, this taps into my obsessiveness and stuff, like totally taps into, if you keep listening, there's more there. Okay. And with this song, I don't know if they're, you know, the Branch Davidian, David Koresh stuff and the whole, you know, the raid on the Branch Davidian headquarters and all of the farce that that was.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's even me going, that did not look like it was healthy what was going on there.
Yeah.
But I can't see for a second that the authorities did the right thing either. Like, there's so much wrong with the whole situation. And somebody's then put that under, like, kind of a beautiful soundscape.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what is this stuff? And I love it. I just lap it up.
The reason I wanted to talk about this and Panau, and yes. I wrote this down because as a teacher, like this is like after you explain that,
yeah.
You've just answered the next question.
Good. Well, good.
Because it was like as a teacher, like if there was a comparison between the two of us, that you're focused, I don't know how to put it, your kids wouldn't believe, the kids that you teach wouldn't believe that you like to listen to this type of music, like electronica, the Panau stuff more than anything else. But even the Boards of Canada stuff, all this obscure, like glitchy electro rock, they would go, oh, really? Oh, you listen to Panau and then you go out and you go out all night and you get home at 5 or 6 in the morning. Like they wouldn't believe that. But when the way you explained that last song, that is perfect. Then they'll go, oh, okay, I can see why. But Panau and that kind of side to it is different.
When I do creative writing stuff, I have this little lesson that I do where I play part of a Biff Tech track, part of Boards of Canada, like really weird stuff.
So I have it written down here for Boards of Canada. Do you play this at school?
Yeah, and then I use it to like to kick off a creative writing exercise because most kids have never heard this stuff and they don't know how to listen to it and then they don't know. You know, it's new to them.
Yeah.
So they write weird stuff.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So Panau, you wrote a lot of good stuff, like you've seen them a lot live.
Yes, yeah.
And the song Samba Nova that you put, I instantly liked. Soon as, I'd never heard it before. I was like, this song's cool. I want it. My kids will love it.
Yes.
Without a doubt. I'm going to play that for them tomorrow and they'll be like, oh, yeah, let's listen to that again. And dance around because they love anything like that.
Just so such cool, like cool groove,
yeah,
groovy
yeah.
samples, but packed with samples stolen from everywhere.
Thank you.
very sweet earlier. You wrote that you wrote off. Was that for the BIFTEC one? You had to buy a BIFTEC present one. For Janie.
Yeah, and we both loved it, and it wasn't out as a single.
Back in the past, we had to wait for the. So we had to write to them.
I went into the Impact Records again.
Yeah.
Canberra people, Impact Records downstairs in the city, but not the second one, not when it was up near where Toast used to be. Anyway, that's a story. But I remember asking at the desk, I'm after this track by Pinnell.
Yeah.
And they're like looking it up on the computer, you know, oh yeah, we'll order that in, and just waiting and waiting and waiting till the CD single came in, because you know.
You guess that's what you had
that's
to do.
That's what you had to do. I'm so excited when I could give it to Janie as a pre. Awesome. That was really cool. And it's over there on the shelf.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And better, just wait. This is the best bit.
He's going over to the shelf now, and he did not even have to look. He just reached in like it was magnetized to his finger.
Okay, and got it. But see, when I was looking at this, I don't know, when I was, you know, you said, we've got to do this soon. Oh, yeah. Let's do it, you know, on the Easter weekend.
Yeah.
So, liner notes. So, who is the... producer on this album, Paul Mack. Or not album, this CD single.
Seriously?
Paul Mack. So Bedrock written Bedrock written by Kate Croft and Nicole Skelties, and the radio edit produced by Paul Mack.
Nice.
And then there's Pipe Dream written by Kate Croft and Nicole Skelties and Paul Mack, like they got together.
Alright. We're gonna talk about the last song.
The last song.
Portishead. And not from what was the album?
Dummy.
Yeah. Not from Dummy.
From their self titled one.
Yeah. Half day closing. This is dark as shit.
Yes, yes.
I did not know. I mean, a lot of these songs are pretty dark, but this song is like, I don't know, like a David Lynch film, like a nightmare.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good way to describe it.
I was just listening going and feeling very uncomfortable listening to it.
Yeah.
So... Again, did you like Portishead when Dummy came out?
Yes, yeah. So, well, I liked them shortly after Dummy came out. A family friend of ours who's a bit younger than me but feels like a little sister, she had Dummy, and I heard Dummy first through her.
Yeah.
And thought it was amazing. I'm sure I'd heard like the main single off that album. I can't remember what it is, which is stupid. But
Sour Times, was that? I don't
know. Yeah, Sour Times maybe. Yeah, was that on that album? I think so. Yeah. And I loved it. I loved the instrumentation, and then there was scratching on it, and then there was Beth Gibbons and her amazing voice.
Singing through a bullhorn.
And then reading about them and hearing that sometimes, like, the band would make all the music and then she'd do the lyrics afterwards. I'm like, what? Who does that? Oh, you know who also does that? The Cure.
Yeah.
As well.
Like, really?
Robert Smith says he does that for some songs. Writes the music and then writes lyrics. Not all of them.
I'm going to have to think about that for a while later.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but then that to me like turned writing songs on their head.
Yeah.
Like, what? You can do that? You're allowed to do that? What? Are we recording some of this out of order? Like that, you know. And Dummy was amazing.
Yeah.
Dummy was just so, so cool. And that's pretty much every song that's on this list has been on an album that I've listened to completely obsessively as well. So, you know, a lot of these songs, I've picked them because... if you like them, dear listener, you might go listen to the album and love the whole album.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I'm at. But Dummy was a kind of, you know, people who like classical music had Dummy on their shelves. I remember babysitting for someone once or some, I don't know, and they had like all classical music and Portishead.
Yeah.
You're like, what? You know, what's so there's something interesting
classical,
here.
Classical, jazz, it had lots of weird mix of music.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the second album came out and I listened to it once.
Oh, really?
Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't remember anything off the second album.
Oh, it's so different. I mean, it's still Portishead, but it's dark.
Oh, I know.
It's like when you listen to them back to back, it's this one feels, you know, Dummy feels all lighthearted compared to Portishead, which is dark as anything. And I love it. And this wasn't even like, I was listening to three different songs to pick.
It was like, we're popular. Well, like this.
Yeah. Well, or even this is what we really like.
Yeah.
This is what we want. But then didn't they, or was that with the third album? Like, I'm sure in one of the stories between albums, they wrote a whole album and then scrapped it. I think it was Dummy. They scrapped it and then did this.
But you enjoy it, like...
I love listening to this. I love where it puts me.
Where does it put you, Nick?
Just, you know, it's good to experience different emotions.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, if if you're in a really good mood, sometimes it's good to have something to snap you out of it and think, if I wasn't in a great mood. But I don't know, I listen to this a lot when I wasn't in good moods as well.
Yeah. Wait, if you're in a good mood, you want to listen to something to snap you out of it.
Well, just to remember what it's like. Like, you're happy because you're not sad.
You not to put in? Are there any that straight away, like if I say,
so one of the things that an air song was on the list, and I mean, it probably would have ended up being Sexy Boy of all silly songs, because that album, that's another Janie and I album, that's an album that was playing all the time at Louis Cafe restaurant when we used to have dinner there.
Yeah.
So much that, you know, when the people are working there say hi to you because they recognize you. We spend a lot of time there, and they also had a lot of similar albums that they put on.
Yeah.
But that, when that came out, that they played that a lot. And so I kind of feel like I'm not acknowledging. I don't know, that's important to me. But it's not good enough to be amongst these other songs.
That was sentimental too. You don't usually do sentimental.
Well, that's... I actually am... Janie's pointed out to me that I'm way more sentimental than I thought I was. Way more. And I... Yeah, and a lot of... things that I would not have acknowledged to myself were sentimental until somebody told me you're quite sentimental about some things. It makes me start a bit. But it's weird because sometimes I look at my shelves and go, oh man, I want to listen to something like this, but I don't have anything like that. All I've got is that.
Yeah,
I've got that, and then I've got that.
Yeah.
And I've got that. I don't have anything that runs on.
Well, maybe...
Regurgitator.
Yes, nice.
The...
You're still listening, Wigo? Yes.
but because I can see down there the side project that he did with the...
Happy Land. Yeah.
And I can see it on the shelf down there.
With the girl from Spiderbait.
Yeah.
His name escapes me. Yes.
Is it Janet?
Janet?
Something?
That was... Maybe? Well, we saw them live with Tism. And that was amazing.
See, but did you say you saw Regurgitator live with Tism? See, I saw them on the same tour when they toured with Tism. That was amazing.
Great. That was a great concert. That was so amazing. And Tism were incredible.
Yes.
But that's for another time.